Hello? Can you hear me? Excellent. So first test. Oh, it's closed. So is this better? Worse? So that's still okay? Yeah? Okay, that's good.
Okay. So discussion's already starting before the lecture. So welcome to our third lecture this year. So first one was by Sophie Nyström, the second one by Marie Möhe. Now the third one is by Maya Bund. Anybody seeing a pattern there? Next time it will be a male presenter, but still this time we have the pleasure that Maya, who has been working for 13 years now at Swiss Re, as I learned, will tell us today about the quantification of cyber risk accumulation and the special specific cases about reinsurance, and particularly Swiss Re, who's the second largest reinsurer in the world. So we will learn something about the topic in terms of quantification, but also, I guess, about the sector a little bit, which is very interesting also for further research. And therefore, we also invited some economists here. So I'm very glad to see also some people from the economic faculty and management. So I hand over to Maya to start her lecture.
Okay, thank you very much, Laura, for that nice introduction. So welcome, everybody. I'm very happy to be here. I'm very honored to be invited. Laura, thank you very much for that, to this lecture. And actually, it's been a long time since I've been in a lecture chamber like this. It's no, I won't tell you how long ago that was when I last sat on your side. So yeah, excellent. Good. So Laura already said I have been with Swiss Re for a long time, and I've brought a picture. This is our headquarters in Zurich. We are a global reinsurer, global reinsurance company. We have operations in, I think, 35 different countries all over the world, and we are the second largest or the largest, depending on what you look at. Actually, as a you know, big discussion going on in the world. But reinsurance is a really unknown thing. It was, to me at least, when I went to university, I didn't know what a reinsurer was, and now I'm working for one. So I have brought you a few things to explain what it is that we actually do, because you need to know this to be then able later on to understand what I mean with accumulation of cyber risk. So I start a little bit with the basics. If you're all bored out of your minds, please tell me. I thought it might be well worth telling a little bit about how does a reinsurance model work, because I certainly didn't know that. But please, we can, you know, be a little bit interactive. If you think I'm going too slow, just raise your hands and I'll go faster. This is a house, is a family, is somebody who owns something, right? And this somebody owns these assets and wants to insure themselves in case something happens to these assets. You know, simplest thing is you buy a household cover. Somebody breaks into your house or your car gets damaged, you buy this cover with an insurance company. So you have a contract that stipulates if something happens, you get reimbursed, right? And then you have a community. So you have very many of these people, families, businesses that insure themselves against all kinds of different events that could happen. So all of these are insured with this one insurance company, and all the other ones are insured with the other insurance company. So this is typical how insurance works. And then you have a lot of other things that can happen. I've just found a few nice little pictures here. You could have an oil spill, or your house is set underwater, some construction errors, whatever can happen. And obviously you have more insurance companies, and all these are insured. All these things are insured. Now comes the reinsurance. The reinsurance sits on top. And the reinsurance, again, has a contract with an insurance company and insures those insurance companies. Now, reinsurance was formed 150 years ago, roughly, a little bit more, when it was clear that some events have so many risks, or so many houses, so many families, so many cars involved, that the insurance company would not be able to pay out in case something really catastrophic happens. So Swiss Re was actually formed when a big fire basically erased the town of Glarus in Switzerland, and the insurance companies couldn't come up with the money to pay for that huge fire. So the first reason for a reinsurance company really to come in was to take peak risks, catastrophic risks, off insurers. And the idea is, since all these reinsurance companies are global, are very widespread, they have so many risks in so many different jurisdictions, in so many different geographies, that it doesn't matter if something happens in one area, because there is a very, very small chance that it happens all over the world. So, for example, if there is a huge earthquake in California, it could be that at the same time you have a huge winter storm in the same year in Europe, but it's not necessarily a correlation there.
So you guys are not making money?
We are. To make money. Well, obviously we are not a non-profit organization. Yes, we are an insurance company, so we have shareholders and they expect a return. What we do is we take, and that's only one of the reasons why reinsurers are there, right, is you take peak risks of insurers. So if something catastrophic happens, the reinsurer would pay out to the insurance company. And the insurance company then, in turn, can pay all those people who have bought the insurance cover, because otherwise they would not be able to get any money. Ah, well, this is, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this contract doesn't come for free, right? Obviously, they give us part of the premium they take from their insureds, and for that they get a reinsurance cover. Okay, now obviously you have several reinsurers, and they all partake in the risks. Now, one of the things that I would want to point you to is you have here a one-to-many and a many-to-one relationship, and this is really important when we're talking about accumulation later on, right? So many different risks flow into one. But also you can have one risk, and I just put this one here. You have this oil tanker spill here, right? And the oil tanker is insured by this insurance company as well as by this insurance company. Now this reinsurance company here insures both this insurance company and this insurance company. So this reinsurer actually has the same risk via two different channels. Just keep that in mind, right, for later on. And then we have even more. So to make it even more complicated, we not only have the insureds, the insurers, and the reinsurers, we also have brokers who broker between insureds and insurers and other brokers who broker between insurance companies. It's not important for our accumulation, but it's important to understand if we're talking about cyber risk and about data and how much data is available. If you have several more intermediaries, it makes it more difficult to get the whole transparency about the data that we need. So this is basically very, very simple how the reinsurance or the insurance model work. And this you might just keep in mind while I go through the more cyber-specific things then later on. Okay, cyber risk in insurance terms. I mean, cyber risk is most of your daily bread, but I look at it from a very, very specific angle, from an insurance angle. And for that, I have brought you a definition. So this is our Swiss Re definition of cyber risk, and there are several definitions of cyber risks out there. So this is the one that we use currently, and you will see there is there are gray zones around these definitions, right? So we talk about risks that emanate from the use of electronic data and its transmission. It can result in physical damages, in loss or corruption of data, and especially financial consequences. Now, in some insurance covers, you will see that also physical data is covered. So if I print out a list of data sets and I take it with me on the plane and I leave it on the plane and somebody picks it up and does something with it, in some insurance covers, that is covered. So it has become broader than just electronic data. In some cases, it's just data, right? So this is very important to know. And if we are looking at cyber risks overall, we always look at the different things that can happen. And if we construct scenarios, and you will see that later on, that's one of our most important methods, how we actually calculate accumulation. This is what we take into account. We take into account who is the actor, right? And you can have errors and mistakes in here. This is really, really important. Not every cyber risk emanates from some bad guy or from some bad girl or some bad people, right? It can also be caused by an error, right? Or a stupid mistake. Then you have all the other actors in there, and they go, as you know, up to nation states who attack another nation state or a company or a sector or whatever. And then you have a motivation behind that, and that's also very important, because if you're thinking through your scenarios that you build, is you can have actors and they have maybe the ability to do something, but do they really, really want that? How big is the chance that they really want to do this? This is driven by the motivation. Why would they want to do this, right? And here we have, again, and this is just a very rough overview. Obviously, you can go much deeper there. You have cyber terrorists that want to create fear, right? You have the curiosity of somebody. I don't know how many of you have, or, you know, no, don't tell me. Have, you know, created some malware or just something, or broken into somewhere where you shouldn't have been broken into, just out of curiosity to see whether you can, right? Maybe into, I don't know, the university directory to see something. I don't know. So can be pure curiosity. In very many cases, it's financial gain, right? People stealing stuff, selling it. So that is very frequent. And then obviously you have the attack vector, which is basically the vector which is used to do something, or to enter a company, or to get the data, or to inhibit the company to do business. And also I would like to point out there is a lot of things on here that you usually wouldn't bring into connection with cyber risk, because if I talk to people, most people think cyber risk, and you immediately jump to all the things in the newspaper a hacker attacked a company, a hospital, whatever. It's always some bad people doing some bad things, right? But it can be that somebody, you know, lost their PC or lost their memory stick. It's a cyber risk, right? Or physical damage can also be a vector. So if a ship kind of puts an anchor down and goes with it over the sea ground and just disrupts one of the most important cables there, right? And the internet is down for a while, could also happen, right? So it's very, very different things that can happen. And I think this is important to just take this into account. Just be aware of this. It's not only the one hacker, you know, with a hoodie in the background doing something bad. It could be all kinds of different people, different motivations, and different means, right? And then obviously a lot can happen. And I intentionally put it kind of a long list on here. It's not exhaustive. There are other things that can happen, but this is a long list of things that actually can happen. So one of the most obvious ones is a breach of privacy event, right? Somebody steals personal data, for example, to sell it. But it can what can happen is a lot of other things as well. Can go until death and bodily injury here, and I have to think hard really about what else can happen. Laura told me you had last time somebody here with a heart pacemaker. This is always the example I bring. How can a death, you know, be caused by a cyber attack? And that is one, and I don't know whether that was also the case, whether she told that story as well, but that is, yeah, no, but this is where I'm thinking, okay, yeah, this is something where even something like that could happen. And on the right hand side you see what is actually the costs that are then occurring to those people that are affected, right? Or to the companies that are affected. And here you see for a breach of privacy event, you can have legal defense cost, right? Huge legal defense cost if you're situated in the US, for example, right? Regulatory fines and penalties. Then you have, maybe you need to restore your data, maybe you need to clean up your infrastructure, maybe you need to do whatever. So there are lots and lots and lots of costs associated to it. And some of these, but not all of these, are currently insurable, right? So a lot of things can happen. Different actors with different motivation, different means, can do something, and it can be an error, by pure error by an employee, right? And then a lot of different things can happen, right? It can be stupidity, right? An employee can put a very confidential document on a Dropbox, right? Happens all the time. Happens all the time, right? So I just want to go through four things here, very quickly bring examples so you can imagine if we are from an insurance perspective, how does it look like, right? So the first one is a breach of privacy event, and the most widely known and biggest probably so far that is really known with some numbers as well is a Target breach, Target data breach. Are you all aware that Target, big retailer in the US, was breached in December 2013? 110 million records were stolen. Now what happened is actually quite stupid, right? So a supplier, a third-party supplier who regulates the heating and the cooling and the air conditioning, was infected, got into the network, and then they were in, right? And over a long time, the perpetrators kind of collected the data, and then obviously stolen them. By now, I think we are over now. This is the loss numbers that are down here are from October 2015. They are still rising. So we are at about $300 million of losses so far, and it's not yet over, right? So it's just to show you these data breaches can be hugely expensive things. Yes, please. So the losses is so I'm target, and now I was breached, and the data that I stored was stolen and sold on the black market. Now what kind of losses do I have? So I need to inform all the customers, send them a letter, right, that their data had been stolen. I get sued big time. There are class actions in the US running. I get regulatory fines. I need to bring in IT teams that help me clean up the mess, all this kind of stuff. So this is one of the best known cases, also where you know a little bit more about how much they have paid out yet. I'm sure there are even more hidden costs that are not in this number here. So it is just, it can be very, very expensive if you get breached. We are a reinsurance company, so we don't insure companies directly. So there would be another insurance company that insures Target, and then we would possibly reinsure that that company. But these data, everything that I show is publicly available information. I couldn't show you any kind of internal claims data or so. So this is a there is our studies out, right? Companies that collect data, and you can see here what some of the statistics. So in the last year, the maximum of data breaches that were recorded by this one company, NetDiligence, was $15 million. The overall cost, or the mean cost, were something about 800,000. So it can be also not so costly, but imagine you're a small company, right? You're a company of 50 people, and you have a turnover of maybe 2 million, 3 million. $800,000 is a huge amount of money for these kind of companies. And this is where I think sometimes we have this impression, oh, only the big companies, they are the ones that are actually the most targeted, and they need to insure themselves, and they need to get, you know, a good security. But I think even the SMEs, the smaller companies, if they have all of a sudden costs, or they need to pay out $500,000, $800,000, they can, you know, they can have a liquidity crisis, and that will hurt them enormously. So we shouldn't underestimate these smaller events. It all depends on who does it happen to, right? So another thing that can happen, and that's actually one of the things we are almost even more worried about as an insurance company, is business interruption. So it can happen, for example, you have a website, or you have a online banking, you get a DDoS attack, and we had that couple of times this year already with Credit Suisse and other banks. Their online banking system was down because they were attacked by a distributed denial of service attack, right? One example I want to bring here is Sony. Sony was hacked in 2014, and you've seen all the press, I guess, with all the pictures and all the internal emails and all of that that was then made public. What happened there as well is the infection was so big they had to take down, basically they had to close down the company for several weeks, and then it took a long time to bring up operations again. So if that company is insured against business interruption, then from an insurance point of view, that is a big thing. If there was an example last year, and I don't know, I think it was in autumn, I think in Warsaw, the airport was shut down for 4 hours, 5 hours. No plane could land or could start because the ground distribution systems didn't work anymore. If that happens, and you know what the turnover is of an airport, huge amount of money that gets lost when something, some company is shut down for a few hours, but even more if it's for half a day, for several days, right? So reputational damage is one of the things that is very, very, very hard to insure because it's almost impossible to quantify right now. Just quickly, in January and in December, TalkTalk was hacked as a telecom provider in the UK. I think they lost in one day a huge amount of their market capitalization. They lost a lot of customers. They didn't get new customers. Their reputation was really, really badly damaged. So the company really suffered a huge loss due to the reputational damage after a cyber breach. So the cyber breach itself might have been costly. I don't actually know how much they lost with that. But the biggest loss they got was actually because their reputation was shot. And the same thing, you probably have all heard about it, Ashley Madison, the adultery website. They as well, they did not only cause a reputational damage to Ashley Madison, but to everybody whose records were exposed in that scheme. So a lot can happen. And my last example on this, what happens is physical damage. And there are two very, very famous examples. One is in 2014 was a German steel mill that where the oven, that you know the Hochofen couldn't cool down in a normal way, so it kind of blew up and resulted in a lot of damage, physical damage, because the steering system was hacked. And the other example that probably everybody of you knows way better than I do is Stuxnet, where the uranium centrifuges were meddled with, and that caused a lot of physical damage. So a cyber event or cyber attack can also result in physical damage, which can be very, very costly. Okay, so insurance, again, bear with me, is very quickly. There are different covers that cover the costs from these events, right? So we have, for example, you could get a payout to restore your data. Cyber extortion is one of the newest things. I think that we have these trends, right, in cyber risk. And in 2014, for example, was all the big retailers that were attacked. 2015, all the big health insurers, because health records were all of a sudden paid a much better price than credit card data, so they were attacked. And now it's cyber extortion. So basically ransomware is installed, then you pay and you get the key and maybe you can operate again. It happens a lot right now, and I predict that it's going to be one of the big things this year. And I'm just waiting for it to also jump over to people, right? Not only companies, but just individuals as well. And then you have things that are currently very hard to insure, and I named it was reputational damage, very hard to insure. It's also IP, very hard to insure. So there is just no number you can put behind the Coca-Cola formula, for example. So there are things that are very, very difficult to insure, and others can be insured. One of the things that I want to mention here, cyber war, that it's usually in insurance terms, you usually have a war exclusion because it's just something, an event that you cannot take into account when you insure something. If there is a war happening, that is usually excluded from every insurance contract. Now, in cyber terms, it is very, very difficult to define, is it a war? Is it terror? Is it, you know, a normal perpetrator? What is it actually? And that is one of the difficulties actually in cyber insurance these days, that it's so difficult to define when a war is a war, right? Please.
Thank you.
So the question here for people on the streaming who didn't hear that is the question of how do underwriters deal with these questions of putting a monetary value to a certain risk, right? If I understood you. So this is actually what underwriters do, right? In property insurance, you usually have something that can be insured, right? You have a car and it has a certain value, or you have a tanker and it has a certain value, or you have the loading of the tanker and that has a certain value, and that is usually pretty. You can define the value of that pretty easily. In other things like liability or where you're it is much more difficult to say. So here you have different different mechanisms in insurance how you define, for example, a payout, right? So it's that's exactly the role of an underwriter, is to find the right value for something that is insured, but also to define the events when the payout happens. Maybe we can take this up later on as well. So I want to put your eye on one thing that I have here on the right-hand side, that is non-affirmative covers, right? So what we have been talking about now was affirmative cyber covers. Is in insurance terms, and this is what I now showed, is a company insures themselves against a cyber event. Now there are other events that might or might not have an impact on other, we call that lines of business, other things that might not be insured by a cyber cover and that might or might not be insured by other normal covers. So I give an example, the German steel mill, right, that was blown up. Probably, and I'm not quite sure how the wording looked like, probably that would have been covered by a normal property cover. Could be. Most probably. But I'm not 100% sure. Motor is another example that I like to give. I don't know whether you all have read that example where the Jeep was hacked on the highway in October last year, taken over the steering and the gas and everything, right? Imagine that Jeep has an accident. Now this is a very tricky thing now, because usually a car insurance, and I'm talking about the liability piece of it, that is driver is the culprit, right? Because you drive carefully or you drive drunkenly and then you have an accident, whatever. Now if your car is taken over, then who is at fault, right? Who is liable actually for that? Is it the car manufacturer? Is it the software company who kind of designed the software that is in the car? Is it the owner of the car who maybe didn't do the updates or whatever? So these are now also developments in insurance that are pretty new and that need to be defined of actually what does that mean, and if there is a change in risk ownership, how does it work, right? Because in this case, then if the car manufacturer was at fault because they had put in a software that wasn't safe, right, and the driver couldn't actually do anything about it, now that is a big difference, right? So this is something that is to be watched, and I'll come to that in a minute as well. So I want to talk to you a little bit about cyber accumulation, because that is actually one of the big problems. I shouldn't say problems, it's a challenge, right? It's a, can't talk about problems. It's a one of the biggest challenges that we have in insurance is cyber risk accumulation. And I just wanted to start this with this white-tailed eagle or white-tailed sea eagle. And I don't know if you still learn it. I still learned it when I went to school. In the 1950s and 60s, people kind of in a very wide, I think globally, used a pesticide, an insecticide that was called DDT. Do you all remember that? All learned it in school. Now what that insecticide did was, one of them, its metabolites, DDE actually, accumulated heavily in the food chain, and the predators who ate the birds and who ate then the insects who were affected by this DDT, they were heavily affected because they accumulated in their bodies, accumulated that poison. And what happened to this fellow here, they couldn't breed anymore. So their eggs became very brittle. So they couldn't, there weren't any little eagles anymore, right? Because when they sat on their eggs, they all would break. So they didn't have any, and they were almost extinct. I think they were even said to be extinct in Germany at some point in time. So this is how accumulation works in biology and happens all the time. You still see that. I mean, nowadays it's not DDT anymore because it's forbidden. But they still have a huge accumulation of heavy metals, for example, in their bodies, because that's also, it accumulates through the food chain. And if you remember back our reinsurance model from the beginning, there you have a kind of a reinsurance chain. And actually, when I looked for a picture, I was thinking of sharks, so I put in a picture of a shark, and then I thought, oh, now I'm talking about reinsurance here. I don't want to for you to get the image or the image of a shark being there, so I rather picked the eagle, so I thought it was nice. Again, quickly, earthquake, right? What's the difference between cyber and earthquake in accumulation? Earthquake, you have all these houses being insured by one insurer, again. And the ones with the red crosses, they are in the same area, right? They sit close to a fault line. So you know the geologists can tell you if an earthquake happens with on the Richter scale of this and that, all these houses will be affected. Okay, so you know what is your, in earthquake terms, you know what is your potential accumulation when earthquakes with a certain level happen, right? And then you have other houses in the same, on the same fault line, insured by another insurer, and they all insure by the same, with the same reinsurer. So the reinsurer can go and they say, okay, we have that and that many houses in this area, and so many houses in that area. So if anything happens, and you have the models, you run the models, right? They are very, very good. You can define actually how big is your accumulation in what case, right? Now take away the earthquake and look at cyber. Anybody know what the problem is with cyber? Well, it's very, very, very difficult to actually find these confinement dimensions, as we call them. So with earthquakes, you have the fault line. You might have, with other property covers, a valley, and all the and there's a dam, maybe. If the dam breaks, all the houses close to the river, they will be kind of affected. In cyber, it's very, very difficult to say, and you don't see it. You can't see it, right? You have to do a lot of questioning to find out to the last. Take the example of Target, right? We had an air conditioning company that was the entry point into Target systems, right? An insurance company who wants to know really how is the accumulation working in cyber, do they ask the question, what air conditioning company are you using, and do you give them access to your system? And there are millions of these questions, and you can't ask a million questions, right? So this is one of the big challenges in cyber. It's where is the confinement, right? And how many companies use the same cloud provider, something happens there, right? How many companies use the same software with the same vulnerability? Very, very difficult. So again, and here I'll go quickly. So if you have these affected companies or affected computers or affected networks or affected whatever, how do you find out that they belong together, and if an event happens, that they all are affected? So what we do is, or basically what you can do is, how do you safeguard yourself, right? So an insurance company wants to still be there tomorrow, right? What they want to insure their customers, and they want to make sure that they survive. Survival is one of the most important things for an insurance company, because if they don't survive, they also cannot pay out their customers. So it's so simple. So what you can do in order to to safeguard yourself when insuring cyber risk is you can do what I kind of put up there. Oh, sorry. Is you, oof. You can stack up the limits. What you do is basically you are super, super conservative. So you say every single risk that I have, I take the whole risk and say if anything happens, it happens to each and every risk. So I basically, I stack them up and I say this is my risk appetite. I want to say I have a billion, 2 billion of risk appetite for cyber risk. And I stack up all the risks that I have in my portfolio, and I say I don't want to go over 2 billion. That you can do. It's a super conservative. How probable is it that all of these risks are 100% correlated? It's none, right? So it's not. But it's you know, it gives you kind of the worst case scenario, and you can safeguard yourself like this in relation to your own risk appetite. What we do is we construct scenarios, and I told you a little bit about scenario construction earlier, and we say we take these scenarios and let them run across all our portfolios, and then we see how big is a possible loss when it happens. But to be able to also look at these scenarios, you have to have a feeling or some information or some research about how correlated are those risks then. So this very quickly is some work that RMS has been doing. is a company that does modeling big time and is going also into cyber modeling. So what you see here is how affected these insurance covers are by these different scenarios. But I would like to show you very quickly what kind of scenarios we use. So some of our worst case scenarios or realistic doomsday scenarios, others call it realistic disaster scenarios, are here. So one is a cloud provider is affected, and the other one is the internet is out, right? And these are some of the scenarios that we play with. And then we have these portfolios, and you see here our portfolios, they cover different industries, right? Financial services, healthcare, etc. And they are affected in different ways, and they are affected in different regions. So we believe actually there is a regional spillover, could very well be, but there's also some regional effects. And in that way that you have the certs, you have the international cooperation, if something bad happens here and not at the same time somewhere else, you can actually react. So the defense mechanisms are already there in place that will allow you to react. And then you run that over the reinsurance portfolio and you come out with a number. Right, and I have put down here in more detail how that works. There's a lot of insurance things in there where, you know, the different insurance covers hit and not hit and attachment points, etc. I'm not going to go into details there, but basically it's like that. You build a scenario, you run it over your portfolio, and you come out with a number. And you do that for all kinds of different scenarios. So you look at what's the worst case that can happen. And then according to that, you are able to also manage your portfolios, right? And distribute the load. The brokers are also helping in trying to find out how the accumulation works, but they don't own risks or they don't carry risks. So the risk itself is always with the insured and then with the insurer and then with the reinsurer on their balance sheets. The brokers don't take that on. So quickly here, I told you these. This is an accumulation that I told you now is within the same cover, right? We have a data breach cover. Many people are affected, so there is an accumulation there. But it can also be that you have accumulation across different covers. And for example, in the Sony case, you have a business interruption that's triggered, you have a data breach that is triggered, you have a directors and officers that is triggered because somebody is suing the board of directors because they have not really fulfilled their fiduciary duties. And then there might be even a property cover triggered because they had to rip out all their infrastructure and needed to replace it. So that might be covered by a property cover. In this case, I'm not 100% sure. Very quickly, if you have this, so different covers are triggered and you have that different times, you get also a nice accumulation there on top, right? So basically what we are doing is we are trying to find out these, what are the scenarios. We are working on the confinement dimensions. We are trying to understand really from an intellectual point of view what can happen to these other lines of business, right? And how are they interlinked with others? And then we go into modeling. And basically what you see is, and this is what makes it so important for insurance, there is a huge there can be a significant accumulation in any insurance portfolio for cyber risk, and even more so on the reinsurance side. And that can be, you know, that can go either via the same cover, cyber risk covers, but also via all kinds of other covers. That makes cyber so interesting, right? It doesn't just hit, you know, one little piece. It goes cross-border. And with this, I would like to stop. And if you want to know more, you can always go on our Swiss Re website, and I'm happy to answer any questions then outside. And I apologize to all the people that are watching now, because we have to leave the room. It is 1 o'clock, and I'm at the end of my lecture. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you very much, Maya. And I think you could see that she has a PhD in environmental sciences a little bit. That was really, really interesting. Thank you so much.
Hi, Sonny. I don't hear you. Hi, Tony. since there's a failure, could you please recall me?